everyone, this is Maya from VedicAstroLounge.com on Max and Friends, LA Talk Radio, bringing you Vedic Astrological Forecast for June 2013. Vedic astrology is an amazing healing art that can help you to create a magical life. If you'd like a reading or if you have any questions, please feel free to reach me at VedicAstroLounge.com. The planetary positions on the Vedic sky for the month of June 2013 are as follows. Sun is currently transiting Taurus but moves into Gemini on June 15. Mercury is currently transiting Gemini and becomes retrograde on June 26. Venus is currently transiting Gemini and moves into Cancer on June 22. Mars is currently transiting Taurus and continues to stay in Taurus until the end of the month. Jupiter has just entered Gemini after transiting Taurus during the last 1 year. Saturn is currently transiting Libra and remains in retrograde motion until July 7. The north node of the moon is currently transiting Libra and the south node of the moon is currently transiting Aries. The major highlight of this month is the transit of Jupiter from Taurus to Gemini. Jupiter is the largest planet in the solar system, and it stays in each sign for one full year. Jupiter will stay in Gemini until June 29, 2014. Jupiter is a planet of spiritual knowledge and wisdom. Gemini is the house of communication and intellect. The transit of Jupiter in Gemini will bring plenty of opportunities for creative expression through various channels. Individuals who have Jupiter in Gemini in their natal chart will experience a stronger influence of Jupiter's movement. In general, there will be a greater intellectual expression in the world in the form of new discoveries, and also there will be a greater enhancement of spiritual knowledge. Also, Saturn is still in its retrograde motion in Libra, so put your focus and energy in creativity and let go of the attachment to the results. Here's the astrological forecast for the month of June 2013 for the 12 Vedic moon signs. Aries, this is your month. Jupiter will be transiting your third house for the next 1 year. It is important to pay attention to how you communicate with your partner and family. Short travels are likely to expand your vision of life. Taurus, this is your month. Jupiter will be transiting your second house. This is a wonderful time for you and you will experience joy in all aspects of your life, especially financially. Gemini, Jupiter will be transiting your first house. It's a great time to begin pursuing your dreams. Jupiter will help you to build your self-confidence. Cancer, Jupiter will be transiting your 12th house. It's a great time to learn to manage your finances efficiently and focus on saving money. Leo, Jupiter is transiting your 11th house. You'll experience gains through children and through profession. You'll also find yourself enjoying all aspects of life during this time. Virgo, Jupiter will be transiting your 10th house. New opportunities will come your way. Focus more on the integrity of your work than the financial gains associated with it. Libra, Jupiter will be transiting your 9th house and this movement will come as a great help to you during your tough times due to current Saturn's movement in your 1st house. Relax and know that you are on the right path. Focus on your own healing. Scorpio, Jupiter will be transiting your 8th house. It is a good time to focus on avoiding disputes with friends and family and also put effort in curbing your expenditures. Sagittarius, Jupiter will be transiting your 7th house. New relationships will blossom in your life and will bring you immense joy. Capricorn, Jupiter will be transiting your 6th house. It's a good time to sort out any outstanding issues with friends and family and to also focus on your health. Aquarius, Jupiter will be transiting your 5th house. There may be a birth of a child in your life. If you already have children, you may experience great joy and gains through them. Pisces, Jupiter will be transiting your fourth house. Jupiter's movement will come as a great relief to you from your tough times due to eighth house transit of Saturn. Keep health as a priority. And that brings me to the end of the forecast. But before I leave, I would like to say that any pain or suffering that we experience in our lives is nothing but just a mere thought that we are clinging on to. It is important to let go of that thought and shift your focus on thoughts that bring you more of what you want to manifest in your life. That is creativity. It is important to put your focus on creativity because only creativity brings us joy. Let go of attachments to the outcomes of your creativity and keep moving forward in life. Have a wonderful month, everyone. Thank you and blessings.
You are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
He says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back, back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from sextile to gossip. Listen and to hear what Max is to share. LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. Well, it's been a while, everyone. You know, we did the Ma Jaya replays. Jai Ma, my love to everyone at Kashi.org. It was tough the last couple of weeks. I miss my Ma Jaya, but I know that she's with me. And I thank you all for tuning in. Remember to get her book, The 11 Karmic Spaces, which is available now on Amazon.com. It has been a wild week, everyone. I've signed with eHow.com. That's right. I will be with eHow. I'm part of their food family there. And also, I've got to let you know, Memorial Day weekend, I am going to be part of the Fort Lauderdale Home Remodeling and Design Show. So if you're in Florida, come on down Memorial Day weekend. You can catch me there. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have Sharon Berube back. But I've got to ask you all a question. Actually, there's a quote, and I kind of dig it. I kind of like it. It's, if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. What do you all think? Do you know what duality in religion means? Do you know what it means to be like almost two-faced religion? I mean, there's a lot of that going around. You know, it's like the church says one thing, but then everyone does something else, and then everyone does something else, and the church disagrees with it, but then it all happens in the church. Is that just duality or hypocrisy? Well, we've got the one and only, our buddy Joseph Lumpkin. He's back tonight on Max and Friends. Then we have, from my-buddha-nature.info, Art Mason will be joining us because he had a great blog, and I read it online there, Zen and Duality. So these are going to be some topics we're going to talk about tonight because I want to know, how can Jesus be God and Jesus be man? I kind of know already, but I want you all to know, and I want to hear your thoughts. So Twitter me, at Max Tucci. Also, we have, now these are all some great things that Joseph brought up to me when I approached him with Zen and Duality. And it was, Jesus was created, Jesus is eternal. Jesus is the same as God, Jesus is different. Where do we stand? Duality has always been the enemy of truth because it demands the answer to be in its extremes. Life is never that tidy. Joseph Lumpkin, welcome back to Max and Friends, my favorite theological author.
Thank you, Max. I appreciate the invitation.
Well, so, you know, this duality concept of people and religion and where it stands and why people are so confused, can we kind of help them tonight?
Well, we can try. but sadly enough, duality is built into the system, so we have to kind of step outside the system to kind of get away from it.
So let's describe and let's define duality with religion. Explain duality.
Well, you actually just really did it well. Duality is a necessity to make a decision in an extreme or to make a binary decision. Duality, you know, you're either pregnant or you're not. Mm-hmm. You used to think that you were dead or you're not. Now they think that, you know, maybe we're brain dead or we're not. So duality changes according to what your viewpoint is, but duality is a binary situation set up in a continuum that is really not necessarily binary, and that's the problem. So duality in its very nature obscures the truth.
Well, that's interesting, because you say here, without duality, we can have truth. And with duality, we can never have truth. Where do
yes.
we stand?
Well, here's the problem. The duality that we set up in our religion and our daily life is based on just a few minor things, slices of the pie. Duality between ourselves and others, duality with ourself and God, duality within ourself. For example, is heaven inside you or is it outside you? If you define heaven as outside you, then something outside you has control of that. So religion has been fighting this battle for hundreds of years, trying to tell us that heaven is above us, and the church stands between us and heaven. That duality is the church will say yes, the church will say no. You're either forgiven or you're not. You're going to heaven or you're going to hell. These things are binary. Whereas in the very, very first part of even Christianity, and certainly now even today in Buddhism, that reality really did not exist. Jesus said in the book of Thomas, recognize what's in front of your face, and what has been hidden from you will be revealed. If those who lead you say, behold, the kingdom is in the sky, then the birds will get there before you. And if they say it's in the sea, the fish are already there ahead of you. But the kingdom of God exists within you and exists outside of you, and those who come to know and recognize themselves will find it. And when you come to know yourself, you will come to be known, and you will realize that you are the children of the living God. Yet if you do not come to recognize and know yourself, then you will dwell in poverty, and it will be you that will be that poverty. In other words, not only will you be poor, but your very existence will be poor. And that's the problem with duality. It makes us poor because it constricts our ability to move, to think, to be creative, and to get outside of a system. So religion, because it is a group of rules, and you either follow them or you don't follow them, religion itself becomes binary, and it keeps us from a living, spiritual, breathing relationship with God.
But now, Joseph, who made these rules? And why, if there's duality, why do we have to agree with them, but then have truth in other things? How can we have self-truth in religion, is the question.
Self-truth is the ability for us to reach far, far down in ourselves and know that everything that comes because of us. I'll give you a couple of quotes. Maybe it'll make
everything. Well, one that I love is, right where we are right now, the fullness of God is.
Yes. Yes.
Right? So if the fullness of God is right where we are at this exact moment, and that's really all we have is this right now, this moment, the now, then why do we have to always challenge ourselves and fight with big religious sectors and have all these disbeliefs and fear that God hates us because we are in the fullness of who he is right now?
It's a good question because, see, in the book of Psalms 82:5-7, it says, haven't I told you that you're all gods and you're all children of the Most High? But if you die like men, you'll die like the fallen princes. So we are God, and God is in us, and we are in God, and we have the fullness of the Godhead right now, right here. But that is the difference between being on a spiritual quest and following religious rules. Rules are binary. The quest goes on forever.
Say that again. I like that.
Rules are binary. But the quest goes on forever.
It does go on forever, everyone. And this is Life Class. You're listening to Max and Friends in LA Talk Radio. We've got it going on tonight. We're talking about duality. We're talking about rules. We're talking about where really is heaven. We've got Joseph Lumpkin here, and we're going to have Art Mason coming on in just a little bit. Now, Joseph, have you written any books on duality?
I have not. There is a book that we put out about a year ago called Feasting at Wisdom's Table. And it gives you the Dhammapada, which is the Buddhist holy book. It also gives you the Hindu holy book. It gives you the Book of Thomas and the Tao Te Ching all in one volume. So it's a really, really rich book.
And where can people find that book?
They can go to Amazon and search on Feasting at Wisdom's Table, or they can go to www.fifthestatepub.com.
That's right.
And they will find that. Now, duality is based on desire and ego, and I'm sure that Mr. Majors will address this, because this is part of the Buddhist belief everything cuts according to where your desires and your ego lie. And if you hold that, then it really kind of recreates you. That's why Bible is so up on, you have to forgive, you have to pray for your enemies and those who use you badly. Because if you just pray for those who are for you, then you're no better than anybody else. Right. But the Dhammapada.
Tell us about the Dhammapada. No, I love it.
The Dhammapada says, all that we are is a result of how we think. It is founded in our thoughts and made up of our thoughts. And if a man speaks or acts evil, pain follows him like the wheel that follows the carriage that's pulled by the ox.
Well, it's very, for every action, there's a reaction.
In a spiritual sense also, and that is truly the key.
Yeah. You know, going back to the whole ego, there's a great quote, and it says, someone asks God or whomever, I want happiness. And Buddha responds to them, well, if I is ego, you get rid of that, then you're good. And if you I want is desire. So if you get rid of desire and you get rid of ego, all you're left with is happiness.
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. So, we have to realize that we really are Buddha already, or we really are Christ already. We have that in us. We have to bring it forward. The saying is, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him.
Y'all got that? Now explain.
If you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. There's a couple of explanations for this. First of all, if you meet the Buddha on the road, you haven't really gotten the message, because you really are the Buddha already. And that guy's an imposter. He's an illusion. He is your idea of what Buddha is supposed to be. And once you kill the concept, this is very, very important in religion in general and in life. If you kill the concept, you have the truth. Mm-hmm. If you kill the concept, you have the truth, because the concept will cloud what you're thinking and how you act. There, in martial arts, which I've been in martial arts for 40 years, there's a saying that if you look for the kick, the punch will kill you, because you have a preconceived concept of what's coming. And it's never like that. God is never the way you think he's going to be. And when you meet him, it's always on a very personal level that goes way beyond your expectations. And as long as you have concepts and expectations, you limit that ability to meet God.
Well, expectations are limitations. I mean, that's
yes.
The bottom line there, right? So now my question to you is, you know, we talk in our emails, we talked about Zen and how I don't really know. You can testify, let's say, because I'm going to read it up how you summed it up, that you can testify that it can be summed up like this for you. No thought, no analysis, no cultivation, no intention. Let it settle itself. Explain that a little bit.
Yes, that is a quote. And in martial arts, everything has to be like a dance. And it's the same in life. We are never the host. We're never leading. We're the guest. We're always flowing, always dancing. And life is never going to throw at us exactly what we think, how we think, when we think it. There's right. always going to be something that comes unexpectedly, and there's going to be joy in that dance if you let it go. So if you spend too much time thinking about what's going to happen and building up this preconceived idea, what really comes, you won't see it. You'll just see part of it. It'll be shadows. So no cultivation. Don't worry about it. No intention. I have no idea what I'm going to do next. I am going to simply be the guest of life that is hosting me.
Now, you know, there's a great ashram that I go to in Florida, in Sebastian, kashi.org. And Majai, who was the founder of Kashi, has a great quote. And the quote was, "Teach all ways, for all ways are his."
Yes.
What is your concept of that? What is your what? How does that resonate to you?
I think that for most people, to clarify, you have to add one thing, and that is love and do what you will. Mm-hmm. Because within that, those are his ways. I don't think that his ways are, killing children.
Right.
However,
or each other.
Or each other. Yeah.
We make it so why do we make his ways, which are very simplistic, so complicated?
Boy, they are simple. They really are. You know, Jesus took the over 600 laws that the Jews had at the time that he was trying to get them back in line and teach, and he reduced it to two. And if you look at those two laws, all it is relationship with God and relationship with others. Love God with all your soul, your mind, your strength, and then love others as yourself. And those two things address the internal and external world that we live in. And everything is brought down to just those two tiny little sentences. But
well, I get
that's
it, but
duality.
People, we hate ourselves, though. A lot of people hate themselves. So
that's
how
true.
Can they treat others with that love when they don't have the love for themselves? It's very difficult.
It is, and it goes all the way back to this problem of not understanding that we really are the children of the Most High, that we are one with God and one with each other. And when we see that, we see the interconnectivity of all people and with our Creator, then everything starts to make sense. Mm-hmm. Other than that, you really are left with a dearth of love and compassion.
Now, you know, and this is why I think the show is so important. And when I saw this blog from Art Mason, Zen and Duality, I was like, people need this, because I always believe in exactly that. If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice. And people fight with that, saying, oh, I made a choice not to decide. But you then made a choice. So, you know, the bottom line comes to this. Duality, for those who don't know, is a Greek concept of either or. And now, Joseph, you sent me this email that really opened my eyes to the whole concept of duality. And the first one you wrote was, Jesus was God, yet Jesus was man. So how do we merge those two together?
Well, they're both true and neither are true. That is to say, we have argued about this forever and ever. Throw a couple of really quick things out at you here. There's a document called the Didache. It means the teaching. And it was written before the scriptures were written, before Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And tradition has it that it was actually written by the 12 apostles. When you look at that document, it says that Jesus was an anointed servant of God sent to man, that men may understand God, but it never ever referred to him as a divine. It never addressed his divinity as other than ourselves. And here's the problem with it: if Jesus told us that we can do greater things than he did, and he's God, then we have a problem with that, because we will do better things, greater things than God. And so these ripples of this trying to understand this duality, which, you know, they're extremes. They both exist at the same time. You had the Gnostics who believed that he was just man. You had others who believed he was just God, and therefore he didn't even have a body. You had all of these thoughts. And then you had Constantine, who was the emperor, trying his best to, to rule over a country that had a high Christian population. And so he literally forced these guys to get together, and under threat, he made them sign a document that basically is a trinity, what we call the trinity today, which says he's all God, all man, all the time.
And all eternal.
Yeah, all eternal. He came from the creation, and it goes through all of this kind of a song and dance trying to bring these two factions together.
The pure duality of Jesus was created or Jesus is eternal. It's like a conflict in itself.
It is. If God came first, and then everything came from God, then Jesus was a created being. If Jesus is God himself, then you have other problems.
Well, that brings us to Jesus is the same as God, or Jesus is different.
Right. They're all wrapped up in this one question called hypostasis, which means the essence of the thing. Is he made out of the same stuff? Well, you know, obviously not. He's flesh and blood. God's a spirit, but the Spirit of God inhabited him. And I think we miss the point here, because I believe the point is we can do the same and greater things as he, because we can recognize that the Spirit of God inhabits us, and that our spirit is eternal, and that we are eternal, and that God is eternal, and that we are the same, and yet we're different. We are eternal, yet we're created. We are of the same essence, and yet we're flesh and blood. And if you get rid of the duality, you see the truth.
Well, duality, as you say, has always been the enemy of the truth, because it demands the answer to be in extremes. Why is it, as humanity, we always have to go to the great extremes to get the simplicity out of things?
I think that the entire human failing is the inability to seek the center path. It really is. And one of the reasons that we create all these rules is that people want control. And to have control, they have to have a little box, and they have to say, if it fits in this box, I accept it, and if it doesn't, I reject it. Denominational boxes have broken Christianity apart into all these small pieces, and all these boxes are defined as one thing or another. You know, the Trinity, for example. The great schism between the Eastern and Western churches built up all of these boxes. They argued, when the Eucharist is blessed, is it the name of the Father or the name of the Son or the name of the Holy Spirit that consecrates the host? Nobody knows that. That's a point of faith.
And this is going back to, what, 300 to 400 A.D.?
Yes, yes. And they argued about when Easter was, and nobody knew the date of Easter. It was picked arbitrarily.
Is it that important, though? Is it that important? And is the importance of Christmas the exact date? People drive themselves crazy, and I've seen arguments. You know, and then you have the Orthodox Church. They celebrate Easter on a different day than the Catholic Church. Why does it make – why? What's the big deal?
Somebody has to be in control, and it truly is a fight for control. And if you really go back to what Paul said, and you don't really reverence one day above the other, and you get rid of all these little boxes and concepts, we could all live in peace.
Right.
But to do that, someone or a group of people has to abandon their castle, and they're not going to do it, because it all goes back to exactly what you said. Ego and desire, it all brings duality.
Right. So if you're just tuning in, we are talking about duality. We're talking about Zen. We're talking about Jesus as being God and Jesus as being man, and why we all just can't get along, as Rodney King would say in 20-year anniversary, speaking of. But, you know, it's the truth, and we always fight with each other. And the simplicity of the quote that was once said is, a man says to Buddha, I want happiness. And the Buddha said, take out I, because that's ego. Take out want, that's desire. And what are you left with, people? You're left with happiness. So we're going to bring on Art Mason. And he's a great writer from my-buddha.com. zen-nature.info. Checked it out there because he brought up to my attention Zen and duality. And we're going to talk about perception, your perception. Is it equal to your reality? Your opinion. Is it equal to your illusion? Your love. Is it equal to your forgiveness? Stay tuned to Max and Friends. Joseph Lumpkin is going to stay with us. Art Mason is going to join us, and we're going to play a song that maybe the title has a little bit of conflict and a little bit of duality. Goddamn, You're Beautiful by Chester C. on Max and Friends. Stay tuned, everyone.
Days I can't see your eyes, I don't even want to open mine. On the days I can't see your smile, well, I'd rather sit, wait the while. For the days I know you'll be near, 'cause a day without you, it just isn't fair. See, the days I can hear your voice, I'm left without a choice. But to get weak in the knees, fall head over heels, baby, and every other cheesy cliche. Yes, I'm swept off my feet, oh, my heart skips a beat. But there's really only one thing to say. Beautiful to me, you're everything, yeah, that's beautiful, yes, to me. Just how much you got me going insane. When you speak to me, sometimes we find, oh, I stutter my words, I say never mind. 'Cause even when you just walk by, well, I look around to seem occupied. 'Cause I'm trying so hard to hide. All of these feelings inside. 'Cause I get weak in the knees, fall head over heels, baby, and every other cheesy cliche. Oh, I'm swept off my feet, my heart skips a beat, but there's really only one thing to say.
This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. Welcome back. Are y'all confused about religion, duality, Zen? What is it all about? What's the ego about? We don't have all all year to explain it to you. We just have 1 hour, and we're giving it to you on Life Class with Max Tucci. We've got Joseph Lumpkin here, and we also have our new guest, Art Mason. But before we get there, I've got to let you all know about a great place called appsbar.com. That's right, appsbar.com. Have you ever wanted your own app, but you can't afford to get it? Well, you know what? Appsbar.com is going to get you one for free. That's right. Y'all heard it here first. If you got an Android phone, go to appsbar.com. Get your app there. I have my own app now, the Max Tucci app, where you can listen to LA Talk Radio live right from there. You click listen live. You could also interact with me there. You could text me and I'll get back to you, or you could tweet me at Max Tucci. Nonetheless, go to appsbar.com because I want you to see my app and I want you to have your own app. You got it? Good. Well, talking about duality here and the whole song God Damn You're Beautiful by Chester C, I think the title in itself is a little bit of a duality, a little bit of a conflict in itself. But nonetheless, do you have conflict in yourself? Is your perception equal to your reality? Well, my next guest, Art Mason, is going to let you know exactly what that means. Welcome to Max and Friends, Art Mason.
Thank you very much.
So explain to us, you wrote here on my-buddha.nature.info, you told us about Zen and duality. You brought this up. You've got people listening. You've got people reading. And then you write here, your perception is equal to your reality. Explain this to us.
Well, very simply, what it means is that however you happen to look at something in your life, an event in your life, is the way reality is going to reflect in that. If you look at, as an example, at a car accident and you have a group of witnesses, no one sees what happened exactly the same way. They all have perceived what happened differently and therefore becomes what they report to the police in the example, and it becomes their reality. And then, of course, from there, the police try to figure out what actually happened in the car accident as close as they can perceive from the information that they got. So the idea with the saying is that with the exception of things in reality that we actually bump into, like walking into a table or something, that all of the events that take place in anyone's life, the reality that we feel or the happiness or the discomfort we feel is basically just what our perception of it is. And no two people will typically ever perceive anything exactly alike.
Speaking of no two people, Joseph Lumpkin, what is your perception of that?
Well, I completely concur. And I think it's the reason that the Gospels are divergent. You have one of the greatest events in the world that happened, and this the life of this great master, Jesus, and you have four people telling four different stories. They are not identical. They are truly according to their perception. John happens to be the most kind of Gnostic and spiritual of them, and the rest are trying to interpret things from a more concrete viewpoint, and they don't line up a lot of times.
That they don't. Now, Art, you write after that, your perception is equal to reality. Every day, your senses feed you information. Your mind makes judgments, and your reality is created. What you perceive becomes fact or reality. And then you continue saying, for you. Now, here's my question. Majaya, who's one of my gurus from Kashi Ashram, kashi.org, she said, thoughts are just thoughts. What do you think about that, Art?
Thoughts are just thoughts. Yes, they are. Thoughts are thoughts that have the potential to turn into things, depending on what our focus with them goes. We have something, from my understanding, we have something like 75,000 thoughts per day for the average person. And one of the problems with that is they tend to be the same 75,000 thoughts every day. And so we get into these terrible ruts with those. I don't believe in any way that a person is his thoughts. Mm-hmm. Because, now, I mean, honestly, we'd all be mass murderers, I think, wouldn't we?
Oh, large group of people would be. But now, you know, thoughts, are they opinions, Art?
They certainly can be. I think that when we start getting into opinions, we start to work our way into the ego portion of it. And I mean, even just saying that is being egotistical in a way, because I'm now forming an opinion on that. But when we start to get into the your opinion is equal to your illusion idea, and this also ties very heavily right back into dualism, we cannot look at anything without trying to make some sort of a judgment on it. And then for some reason or another, as the ego ties into it, we're actually willing to fight and argue about that opinion when there's not necessarily anything to fight and argue about.
Well, we like to fight, don't we, Joseph? People like to fight.
We do. Many
And it
many
brings
wars.
It back to religion, right? It brings does. It back to war and religion. Why do we have this opinion or illusion of war, Joseph?
Well, I give you an example that kind of, to me, it just breaks my heart, but it just really kind of sums up the whole thing. The Gnostics believed that God is within you, and you don't need any kind of mediator, not even the clergy. And the church had always been trying to extinguish them. Well, when they finally got to the last stronghold called the Cathar stronghold, they sent in an army from the Vatican. And the rule was, kill everything, man, woman, and child. God will know his own. And they did this because there was a group of people who said, we don't agree with you, and we don't think that we need you controlling us. And that's where the ego and everything came from. I do kind of disagree in that I think that we are, in time, our thoughts. There's a quote from the Dhammapada that says, he abused me, he beat me, he defeated me, he robbed me. And in those who harbor such thoughts, hatred will never cease. And hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. This is the old law, that hatred ceases by love alone. And I think that in time, like Proverbs says, as a man thinks, so he is. But it takes time to get that thought into action and into our spirit, if you will, and we become either hateful or compassionate.
Well, Art, I love when you write in your opinion is equal to your illusion. With this information, you form opinions in your mind, belief systems. These systems create the illusion that is your life. This does not mean there is any truth anywhere, only opinion and illusion. So why don't you just let people know right now what the difference between opinion and illusion is?
Well, as the opinion is formed, as you state, we start to develop core beliefs, and these core beliefs really pretty much start at birth. As we're growing up, we're given a lot of them by our parents, by our teachers, by the things we run into in our environment. And the reason that they become illusion is because they become so strong within us that we lose the ability to be open-minded. We lose the ability to see any other alternative. And that's sort of a dangerous route to take, because it tends to lead to a lot of misery in our lives. I know if I had held fast to some of the things that I believed when I was younger, I was at one point in my life very, very pessimistic. I don't know where I would be today had I managed to hold on to that illusion that everything in the world was bad.
Well, you know, speaking of everything in the world being bad, there's a lot of people that believe that. There's a lot of people that see that. And I think the duality of everything is, how can we have this love in us? You know, Joseph and I earlier spoke about the simplicity of what God is, which is love. And how can we know hate? So you write it perfectly here. Your love is equal to your forgiveness. And the final of the dualities today, you think you can know love and still hate. So elaborate a little bit more with us right now how we know love but we can still hate, and why we have this conflict with our internal, I almost think it's a natural desire to love, but yet hate.
Well, I definitely agree that it's a natural desire to love. If you take a look like today versus maybe 50 years ago, people don't stay together today in relationships like they did back in the 50s and in the 60s, because the opinion has changed. I mean, marriage is not necessarily viewed as being forever anymore. And you will see that people nowadays, they will leave a relationship and be very quick to enter into another one, which has a tendency to fail as well. Because whatever hurt they are carrying from the previous relationship, they're still carrying with them. And I don't believe that if a guy is walking down the street and, you know, says hello to you as he's passing, it's pretty much impossible to hate that man. You may dislike him, but it's pretty much impossible to actually hate him because you've never had love for him. Uh-huh. And so that's where, you know, we come into the opposites. But for the forgiveness aspect, where that's mostly being directed at, really is the only person, in my view, that ever needs to be forgiven is yourself.
Now, how do we forgive ourselves, though, Art?
One step at a time. A lot of it is overcoming programming.
Yeah. And what do you say about that, Joseph? How do we forgive ourselves?
It's difficult. I think we have to see ourselves through God's eyes, if you will. We have to give ourselves permission to be imperfect. I find that in my life, as I have gone on, you end up picking up sorrow like heavy rocks in a knapsack. And by the time you're at the finish line, you're so weighted down that you are you're dead spiritually, and you have to let go of that knapsack. It's a very difficult thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I always say this, and this is a little life class lesson for you all tonight on Max and Friends and LA Talk Radio. You got to look in the mirror and look into your eyes and say, I love you. I dare you all to do it. And I want you to tweet me your feeling after you do it, because a lot of you haven't looked into your own eyes to tell yourself, I love you. All is forgiven. Pat yourself on the back. You're validated. You know, the problem, I think, with humanity now is with children, we have the fatherless sons, the motherless daughters, and no one validates these children. So they grow up not knowing who they're supposed to be, not knowing that they're loved. So look in the mirror, tell yourself in your own eyes, I love you. If you can't still look in both your eyes, look in one first and then look in the other and say, I love you. And let me know how you feel. Twitter me at Max Tucci. Now, I've got to ask you a question, Art. And you conclude your blog, your writings with calmness and joy. And I think ultimately everybody wants to find calmness and joy in life. But how can we find it if we have that duality of chaos and hate?
That gets down to, first off, being able to identify the two extremes. Mm-hmm. Right? To identify and be okay with the fact that you get angry about something, rather than feeling guilty about being angry at your child for something they did, and then try to come back to the middle ground. Because when you start to come back to the middle ground, that's where you are going to find where peace is. And all of the different religions all have different ways of coming back to the middle ground. Some will go within in meditation, others will pray. There are all sorts of different ways to come back to that center. And the more you practice coming back to the center, the calmer you become, rather than having these, wide variety of cycle from either being extremely happy one day to being extremely depressed the next day. Just keep trying to come back to the middle.
And how do we get back to the middle besides breath? Because I know that breath is one way that we could just take a deep breath, exhale, and recenter ourselves, recalculate ourselves to come back into that core of who we are. Take a deep breath, let it go, and just relax a minute. You know, when we get into that moment where we want to go into chaos, because I think we like chaos, don't we, Art?
Oh, I think we do, yeah.
What do you think, Joseph? We like chaos, right?
Dealing with a lot of people in my life right now who are addicts. They chaos, are drama, drama and chaos addicts.
Yeah, people are addicted to the story of chaos, right? Because I don't believe that they actually like chaos. They like the stories that chaos writes, and they become addicted to their story, right?
I totally agree with you, absolutely.
So here we are. We're in chaos, right? Chaos is all around us every day. We thrive on it. We then get our pens and our papers, and we write down the chaotic day we have, and we mentally remember it, and then we let everyone know our story of our chaotic day. Instead of going the chaotic route, take the breath, take a moment, relax, recalculate, and go into the calmness of life. Now, we're not going to go and preach our stories of calmness because they're boring, more or less, right? They're boring. We don't have an audience for calmness. So that's why we need to have an audience with ourselves. Now, before we wrap this up and get going, I want to talk to you real quick, Art, because I want you to let people know how everything comes down to what we think.
Well, it does. Everything that exists in this world has been created twice. First by thought. The car you drive was someone's thought. The program that we are using for this communication was someone's thought before it became a reality. And that's just essentially how it is. It is true when Joseph quoted the Dharmapada, we are what we think. And when I say that we aren't our thoughts, like when we first brought up that particular thing, we have bad thoughts. That doesn't mean we are those bad thoughts. But he is very correct that we are what we perpetually think. And when we can change that that constant thought train to something that we want, then you see enormous changes in your life.
Absolutely. Now, how can we understand our mind so that we can transcend this duality and get a glimpse of what life is really like?
Well, I watched a video today, briefly, of Eckhart Tolle, mm-hmm. Talking about the calming the mind down, and he doesn't seem to be very fond of computers, but he referred to how our senses are bombarded every day by the devices that we have that are supposed to be making our lives easier. I know I've got a BlackBerry sitting here that I spend way too much time with. And as he puts it, and I think that it answers a question you asked a little while ago about how do we come back to the center, is to practice. Take your cell phone, your iPhone, whatever it is, and put it down for 2 minutes and just spend 2 minutes alone with yourself. And do this practice throughout the day because it will teach you to come back to the center when you need to. If you're coming back to the center and balancing yourself when you don't need to, that practice will help you do it when you do need to, sort of like practicing for the game.
Absolutely. Now, Joseph, I ask you the same question. How can we bring our mind to understand what life is really supposed to be like?
Truth, I think, is in peace, because there you get rid of the desire and the ego. The problem with the Christian church right now is that we have completely forgotten meditative prayer. There was a movement in the Dark Ages called the Desert Fathers. They would go out and they would meditate and they would listen. We don't listen anymore. We babble. God, I want this. Oh, Lord, please do this or do that. Who in the world are we to tell the Creator what to do and how to do it? If we would just shut up, and that's very difficult to do because the mind chases itself, as they say, like a pack of monkeys. But if you will just be quiet and be calm and wait to hear that internal voice of God, you will sink to the center path.
Mm-hmm. Well, I always love to say, be still and know. I think that's the simplicity of it all, is to be still and know and stop writing books of chaoticness, people. Stop writing these books of your story. Stop getting addicted to your story of what God hasn't done for you. Because in the end, it's not really our story if we believe it's his story that was written for us. And now the simplicity of everything and breaking it down, people, is there's only one way to live this life. And it's in John 13 and 34, which is love one another as I have loved you. So y'all must love one another. Joseph and Art, I thank you so much for being here on Max and Friends tonight. I hope we gave some listeners out there a new way to look at duality, to look at life, and to look at ourselves, and to be still and know. Do you think we've accomplished that?
I hope so. And thank you, Art. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Max.
It's my pleasure. And thank you both for being here tonight. Everyone, if you missed any portion of the show and you want to be enlightened, go to the Max Tucci Archives on LA Talk Radio. Get the archive. Listen to it. Love it. CBS News is coming up next. But before we go there, I'm going to play a song, Lead Me to the Water. Love one another. Stay tuned because I've got a message for you in the middle of the song. Tuning in to Max and Friends right here on LA Talk Radio every Sunday night live at 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. Eastern Time. Now, I've got to let you all know that you can go to the Max Tucci Archives and you can get all my shows here for almost – we're going into our fifth year here on Max and Friends. How cool is that? You're listening to Sharon Agati here, Lead Me to the Water. I've got to say thank you to Joseph Lumpkin, to Art Mason, and to Chester C. Goddamn, you're beautiful. That was the song. Hey, everyone, stay tuned to Max and Friends because I've got to let you know that we've got a very, very special – new thing coming on Max and Friends here. We've got the Vedic Signs coming up by Maya Love. They're going to play every first of the month so you can know what's going on in your star sign. Hey, everyone, a new command I give to you. Love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Have a wonderful week. Take life to the max and stay tuned for CBS News. Good night, everyone. Hey, Ronan, thank you. Love one another.